It's time to awaken to your ultimate potential.
Always something to learn.
The more real and truthful you can get with yourself, the happier you're going to be.
Nothing happens in the comfort zone.
There are no set rules on how to attain success and to feel fulfilled.
Each one of us are born with a purpose.
For me, I knew there was something bigger.
You don't conquer the mountain, you conquer yourself.
I'm Crystal Bauer, wellness expert and entrepreneur. Each week, I'm speaking with incredible individuals, inspiring you to awaken your ultimate potential. Welcome to the Live Greatly podcast.
If we're looking to address the challenges inherent to social media, we have to get better at teaching young people and all of ourselves to be well, to regulate in an anxiety-filled world. And number two, I think we have to teach and talk about the meaning of happiness.
If you are looking to add more kindness in your life, or if you're looking to teach your kids to be kind, this episode is going to bring you a ton of value. I had a really incredible conversation this week with Houston Kraft. He's the co-founder of Character Strong, an organization providing curriculum and training to help teach leadership, character, and social emotional skills in over 5,000 schools globally. He also wrote the book Deep Kindness. We are going to be talking about how to teach your kids to be kind, how to navigate social media usage, how to be kind to yourself, and how to add more kindness to your life, which is so incredibly important, especially given the current climate of the world. So I'm super pumped about this episode. It's such an incredibly important topic. Let's jump right into it and welcome Houston Kraft to the show.
Yeah, my joy. Good to see you.
Yeah, you too. To start, I would love for you just to share a little bit about yourself and what you're currently up to.
The who am I question.
Who are you?
I don't know. Figuring it out every day. My name's Houston. I currently help run an organization called Character Strong, which is my life's work. I've been speaking and working in schools for a decade. I spent a lot of my time wandering around doing assemblies, if you remember those. Mm-hmm. I spoke at about 600 high schools and middle schools and realized that the message needed to be scaled beyond myself on a lot of airplanes. And so I came together with a hero of mine to create Character Strong, and we serve schools through curriculum and professional development. So pre-K through 12th grade, we help schools teach the skills and competencies of empathy, emotional regulation, kindness, and all the things that we believe help increase the likelihood that students feel like they belong, help increase mental health and well-being in young people and in adults, and help people feel engaged, that they are capable of making an impact in their school and their communities in the world. So that's what I think about most days.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's so needed. I mean, kindness in this world is so incredibly important. And I know I have two kids, and one of them just started middle school. And so you hear stories and, like, you know, just mean words and kids that aren't thinking before they speak, and the words can hurt, and they can last a lot longer than I think kids realize. So what tips do you have for the parents listening on how they can raise empathetic, kind, loving children who, you know, hopefully are supportive and, you know, kind to their classmates and peers and friends?
It's a great question. It's unfortunately a complicated one. I wish I had all the easy answers. I think step one in my brain is acknowledge the gap. And one of the most frustrating pieces of research I know came out of Harvard's Graduate School for Education. And they asked families to rank in order what they wanted most for their kids, for them to be high performing, happy, or kind. And the interesting data was that 80 something percent of families said that they would rather their kids be happy or kind over high performing. And then they asked the kids of those same parents, hey, what do you think your families want you to be? High performing, happy, or kind? And the data was the exact opposite.
Huh.
In the study, they called it the rhetoric reality gap, the gap between what we say is important and what we actually make important. And I think that's an important gap to acknowledge if we're going to help raise empathetic, kind young people, is that we can't just say things are valuable. We have to make them valuable. And the way we make things valuable is what we give our time to. It's what we measure. It's what we teach. It's what we celebrate. And so for each of those categories, right, there's a lot of action items, a lot of steps that we would need to take in order to, I believe, begin to close that gap. I think it means allocating more meaningful time towards things that we take for granted as obvious, right? Like, we all want to be kind, but if we don't make time for the practice of it, then we're going to continue to experience it just as a value and not a behavior. We can say that kindness is important, but the primary thing we measure in schools looks a lot different. The things that we celebrate. I'll never forget being at a high school in Texas who they're like big back to school event. I was doing professional development and they were like celebrating. They're one of the top 50 high achieving schools in the country. People were cheering and all excited. And at the end of the day, I'm walking next to a counselor and she says, you know, we spent a lot of time celebrating this big win in our school. And we send a kid to the hospital every week for mental health supports.
Wow.
Wow. And I'm like, maybe our definition of like top 50 high achieving schools needs to change. What does achievement look like if it's at the expense of our collective well-being?
What you're saying though about sacrificing well-being at the expense, or basically sacrificing well-being for achievement, is something that I also saw in practice because I was working in integrative psychiatry for quite a while before I started my business. And that was something that actually got me inspired to start my company, to be like, we need to do something here because this does start at the school level. And then it progresses into the workplace. And people think like, when I check off this box of achievement, at some point I'm going to be happy. I'm going to have that sense of fulfillment, but that only lasts for like a short bit. And then people are left feeling a little empty because they're not taking care of themselves, or they're not spending time on those really meaningful, important things like kindness, connection, and deeper meaning in life. So this definitely resonates with me.
Yeah. But a lot of it starts with the questions we ask each other. And as families, if you're looking for a way to change how we measure achievement, it's not always about like, what grade did you get on the test? What did you learn today? You can ask questions like, who did you help today? What have you done for others today? You know, what was an act of service? What moved you today? What inspired you today? Right, we can escape the how was your day or the transactional, how'd the test go, and orient our even some simple daily measurements that happen in the way we ask questions.
Yeah, that's great. Even just something as simple as like around the dinner table, like what you just said, like having that be a really key part about, you know, what did you do that was kind today? And that's something that we like to do as a family, is just really try and focus on filling buckets. And there was this bucket book that I loved when my kids were little, and it just talked about like trying to fill other people's buckets. So we'll always be like, you know, we hope your bucket's filled and we hope you fill everybody else's buckets. It's like those simple phrases and little things I think can help kids see that as an achievement, that they're making their parents proud and they're doing things that make other people feel good and themselves feel good too.
Absolutely. It's a language. There's a whole vocabulary to it that our culture doesn't effectively promote, right? Because our culture orients everything towards productivity, and kindness isn't always productive in the moment. It's productive in a different sense, but not in the sense that our world typically measures. And so one of the best gifts we can give young people is the vocabulary, the questions that guide a different way of thinking.
Mm-hmm. And branching off this subject a little bit, I would love to get your thoughts on social media, because that's something new that I didn't have when I was growing up. It's like a new, I don't know, challenge. I see it as a challenge for kids to navigate, and especially with bullying and the feeling of you're not enough, or jealousy and comparison and self-doubt and all of that. I think that in certain ways that can be amplified by social media. So what are your thoughts on how to approach social media from a place of kindness to yourself and to others? And this goes for adults too, because it's not just kids, you know, adults have struggles with social media too.
Yes, plenty.
Yeah.
I'll frame it in a few different ways. To me, one of the biggest challenges of social media is just overconsumption that leads to anxiety. So young people today consume more information than has ever been true in our history. We are exposed to thousands and thousands of words. We're exposed to like gigabytes of data and information and imagery. And we spend a lot of our waking hours consuming things at a rate that is unprecedented. Our brains aren't yet caught up to that. And as a result, we get this just like deluge of data at the expense in many ways of our mental health. And one of my favorite authors and a friend, her name's Dr. Michelle Borba. She wrote a book called Unselfie. And she's been researching empathy for 30 years. And I love her approach. It's not just how do we develop empathy? She asks the question of what gets in the way of empathy. She says in the research, the three biggest barriers to cultivating connection or empathy is narcissism, fear, and anxiety. All three of which sort of categorically and statistically have increased in the past few decades. And for lots of reasons, I would assign social media to one of those things. Social media can increase fear, it can increase narcissism, it can increase anxiety. And when those things go up, empathy goes down. Makes sense. Anxiety is a self-consuming emotion. The more worried I am about what's going on in my world, the harder time I have extending myself into yours. So one of the challenges is increased anxiety is going to make empathy harder. So as a roundabout attack, I would say that one way that we can address social media is to get better at teaching the skills of reducing anxiety. So if we can't effectively remove social media altogether, which I don't think we're going to be able to do anytime soon, can we teach skills that help balance it out? Can we teach emotion regulation? Can we teach deep breathing? Can we teach more deeply about well-being and what it means to be well in our world? Which leads me to the second point, which is about the idea of happiness. I think social media is most dangerous because it plays on our human desire to be happy. And I'm a word person. I love different types of words to describe things that I think sometimes the English language does clumsily. And many years ago, I heard about different levels of happiness and how in Latin, there's different words used to describe different kinds of happy. So the first word is latus. Latus is the happiness of a thing. I see the pizza. I eat the pizza. I am happy. The problem, of course, is that it's transactional. It doesn't take me long until I need another pizza to be happy again. And our world promotes this kind of happiness pretty incessantly. It is the gathering of things. It is the gathering of money, of consumption. And I think when you think about it through the lens of social media, it's the gathering of things like likes. And when you draw that comparison, you realize that gathering likes or comments or followers on a thing is the equivalent of making people things. That reduces our capacity for empathy, and it makes all of our happiness transactional and momentary. It's a temporary thing, and we will always need more likes and more things to be happy. The second level of happiness is Felix. Felix is the happiness of comparative advantage, meaning I have more than you, so I'm happy. Social media plays on this, of course, because we're looking at everyone else's highlight reels while we're suffering in our own real, expansive, more complex life. And so we're constantly playing that comparison game as you scroll. Oh, I wish I was like this person. I wish I had their hair. I wish I had their job. I wish I had their girlfriend. I wish I had their money. I wish I had their life. And we're constantly playing that comparison game in a way that it is devastating to our sense of happiness because we're never going to win. We're never going to win that game as we scroll. We're just going to constantly exhaust ourselves with comparison, which leads me to the big one that I love the word because the word is beatitudo. And I always remember it like beautiful with an attitude. And beatitudo is seeing good and doing good for others. So it is first an awareness to find good in the world, to seek it out. And then it is the action of generosity or kindness or compassion to try to do good for others in the world. And the result of that is a different kind of happiness. It's a humbling that makes me feel more connected to people around me. Mm-hmm. It yields gratitude in relationships that are strengthened. It yields joy. Even in times where like the practice of doing good is hard or sacrificial or painful, like the far side of that, many of us know, is really beautiful. And I say all that to say this, that if we're looking to address the challenges inherent to social media, I think number one, we have to get better at teaching young people and all of ourselves to be well, to regulate in an anxiety-filled world. And number two, I think we have to teach and talk about the meaning of happiness. And our world is going to tell us relentlessly that we're supposed to be happy all the time. And I don't think that's actually the truth. I don't think that's actually what we need as people. I think we actually more deeply crave purpose, connection, meaning, community, which when we do those things well, there are going to be plenty of chapters where we're not going to be happy, where it's going to be really hard or uncomfortable or sacrificial. But the byproduct of that is much deeper joy. And so I don't think we are going to erase social media, but can we leverage it in a way that helps us better understand and lead to like a deeper sense of happiness? Can we teach what happiness looks like and that we're not going to find it in likes or in comparison, but in something much more challenging, but more meaningful?
Yeah, that was beautiful. I think that fostering of connection and a deeper meaning is so incredibly important. And that connection to like your personal mission in this life, you know, which surpasses the likes and the scrolling and all of that. And I think if people take time to really reflect on that and to explore and to figure out what lights them up, what drives them, that can help guide them to that greater sense of happiness. You know, and on that note, I would love to hear some suggestions that you have for people to develop more kindness towards themselves, more self-compassion, more self-love, and to be able to tap into that like inner peace and deeper meaning for themselves and for their lives.
Yeah, I think the word practice is a good one. For me, so much about what kindness can be in our life is a ritual. It's a routine. It's something that we, in order to make it real, it needs to be an active, consistent pursuit. My favorite simple example is my mom, who kindergarten through 12th grade wrote me a note in my lunchbox every day, my entire school career. Aww. And I think back, I have a lot of these notes. I look at them. They're not long. Right? They're not complicated. Sometimes it was a word of the day that she wrote down and defined. Sometimes it was a quote she found. Sometimes it was just a note that was affirming or loving. So I'd argue it probably took her 2 to 5 minutes every day to write these things. But when I look back on it in, you know, accumulation, I realize that it is collectively probably like the single biggest act of love in my life. Aww. It was just the sheer consistency of it. And I think that's the challenge many of us face with kindness is that our practice of it is typically when it's convenient. And the argument I make in my book, which is called Deep Kindness, is that when we aren't practicing kindness consistently, we're actually just practicing niceness. We're practicing something that's convenient to us, which number one, and perhaps most importantly, doesn't actually help us grow. My speaking mentor and a friend of mine, his name's Tyler. Tyler's one of my favorite nuggets of wisdom from him is a commitment to growth is a commitment to pain. Which means anytime we want to get better at anything, it requires us to do things that are challenging, uncomfortable, and sometimes painful. And not that my mom writing a note every day was painful, but it certainly required the intention and sacrifice of daily time. Mm-hmm. And I think we get overwhelmed sometimes with abstract values like kindness or gratitude or presence, whatever the thing is that we want to be. And I love the premise. My friend Dexter Davis says, we're not human beings, we're human becomings. Will Durant says, we are what we repeatedly do. Excellence then is not an act, but a habit. I scratch out excellence and I'm like, let's fill that in with whatever we want to be. Kind, for example, kindness is not an act, it's a habit. It's something we do repeatedly and habitually until it starts to become a part of who we are, not just something we believe in, but it becomes part of who we are because we behave in it consistently enough. So in terms of like a practice, in terms of a tip, there's lots of ways to actualize that in your life. Maybe it's a part of a morning routine. For me, I need to put stuff on my calendar. Right? Like I'll block out time on my calendar visually to add that to my practice. Organizationally, at Character Strong, our team, everyone has an accountability partner each quarter, and we set character goals. So the beginning of a quarter, we'll say, this is what I want to be more kind, healthy, balanced, present. And then each week, we establish what that looks like for the week. And then every single day in the organization, we have our like our work goals where we share what we're going to get done that day. And we balance that. We say, here's what we have to do. And right above it, we say, here's who we want to be. So at the top of our goals each day, we write out a to-be list. I want to be kind today. It's going to look like this. And then I have a partner this quarter. Her name's Ashley. Ashley and I get to check in. And every week, as we're measuring our metrics in the organization of making progress in the business sense, every week we also check in, is your character goal on track or off track? Are you aligning your behaviors to the abstract things that you say you want to be about? So a few different ways that like we try to mobilize that, because at the ultimately we have to create systems to hold ourselves accountable. Otherwise, we're just going to stay busy and overwhelmed and stressed.
Some great advice there. And I'm going to put a link to your book, Deep Kindness, in episode details. So if you're listening and you really want to learn more, you can click there to get it. I want to do one more topic before we go to the last lightning round, because we're getting close to the end here. But the last thing I want to talk about is seeing that there's a lot of division right now in the world, you know, with vaccinations, with a lot of other stuff too. There's a lot of people on what seem to be opposing sides, and there's a lot of anger and resentment. And what insights or advice would you have for people who are potentially struggling with that, where they have a lot of anger or resentment towards people who don't share their views on some of these really hard topics?
Well, the first thing is not to dismiss anger as a bad thing. Anger is a motivating emotion. It's a clarifying emotion, often also a secondary emotion, right? We feel anger as a result of feeling fear or scarcity or sadness or resentment. Those things lead us to feeling anger. So I sometimes feel angry because I feel sad at our inability to listen to each other. I feel angry because I don't feel heard in my own position sometimes. And as a result, I'll get angry. And that anger, we need to first learn how to like channel that well. Anger can be motivating if we assign it a destination. So for me, it's like, how do we get angry towards listening? How do we get angry towards healing? How do we get angry towards action or learning? Right? If I get, what if instead of angry making me lash out, what if anger forces me to do more research, to listen to more podcasts, to intentionally seek another perspective? The biggest challenge we face is that we continue to promote the narrative that our politics are our identity. And the more that we continue to do that, the more we're going to continue to distance ourselves from each other and reduce our capacity to listen. Because when we begin to identify with a thing, then anytime someone disagrees with that thing, it's not an assault on our beliefs, it's assault on who we fundamentally are. And when that happens, it's a whole lot harder to listen. So the practice is to continue to dissociate our opinions and beliefs from who we actually fundamentally are, and to do that same thing for the people around us. I love the premise that forgiveness is separating the person from the behavior. People, while are made up of many behaviors, people are not fundamentally their behaviors. And if we can separate who someone is from how they're behaving or what they believe, well, we can show up and listen to a person while disagreeing with their beliefs.
I love that. Yeah, that's really, really well said. So anything else you would like to share before we go into the last kind of wellness lightning round at the tail end?
No, I think to go back to the premise of what sometimes this quote unquote work can feel overwhelming. And I really believe that one of the most startling statistics I know is that 45% of our day is habit, it's routine. And we crave routine. Our brains, it's an energy conservation technique. The more we can reduce the number of decisions we make each day, the less exhausted we are. And so our brain is looking constantly for habits. And I think to myself, if 45% of my day is habit, what percentage of that is designed to be kind, be well, to be whole, to be healthy? And I give myself permission sometimes to say, what if I just made 1% of my day kind? And I would argue that that 1% shift over time is going to have a much bigger impact than any like huge retreat or big action or like transformative experience. I just think about my mom writing notes in my lunchbox.
Yeah.
That 1% shift is going to be the thing that shapes us.
I love that. And it makes it more doable too. If you say 1%, you know, that small thing, it's like that feels like it's achievable. I love that. Well, this has been awesome. Okay. So are you ready to do a few really quick wellness lightning round questions?
I think so.
Okay. Let's do it. So first question, just tell me, you know, first thing that comes to mind, what is a book you've recently read that you would recommend?
I'm currently reading a book by The School of Life, which is a sort of consortium of modern day philosophers and brilliant writers. The book is called An Emotional Education, and it's good.
Love it. Okay. So if you were on a deserted island and you could only bring three foods with you, what would your three food choices be?
Pizza, peanut butter, and Honey Mama's chocolate.
Love it. All right. Last question. Knowing what you know today, what advice would you give to yourself from 10 years ago?
Loneliness is okay.
Thank you so much. This has been such a wonderful conversation, and I really, really appreciate you sharing all of your insights with everyone today.
My joy. It was fun.
Thank you so much for spending time with me today. I absolutely loved sharing these insights with you. If you have a moment, I would greatly appreciate you leaving a review about what you loved about this episode. Leaving reviews helps the show gain visibility so those who can benefit from it can gain access to it. Thank you so much for your support. And until next time, this is Crystal Bauer with Live Greatly, inspiring you to awaken your ultimate potential.